Oh boy, here we go again. Does anybody know? I lost my goldfish. I can't find my goldfish. And I'm not talking about the crackers.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
There they are, they're behind the couch.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird if you like that sort of thing. Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. The show. The Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome to the program. How are you today? Great, fine. I'm hooked, man. I'm hooked, and it's not on drugs. No, it's not drugs, it's not cigarettes, it's not booze, it's nothing. It's tea. Yesterday on the show, we had an interview from London with Stephen Twinings, who is the head everything of the Twinings Tea Company, which is hundreds of years old. He's like fourth or fifth generation leader of the Twining Tea Company. And he was just so charming. And he talked about his, Ron, I spend most of my time in the little shop in London. And I couldn't get over that image of the little shop in London. I talked about that yesterday. He turned me on to tea. I was never a big tea drinker. I just thought tea was kind of like, you know, kind of weird water, weird hot water. And then, so he sends me as a promotion to me, because he loves me, I guess, a box of Twinings peppermint tea. And I wouldn't say I suffer, but I have concerns about indigestion. I get gas very easily, you know, I get a little bit of that stomach burning, you know, irritation stuff here and there when I drink milk or something, you know what I mean? So this peppermint tea comes through, and I start looking up peppermint, and I find out peppermint is really good for your digestive system. So I start drinking this stuff. I haven't put the cup down. I've been drinking like about... I've had like 4 cups of tea since last night, and I feel wonderful. I feel energetic. I feel clear. My body feels good. My digestive system is in tip-top form. I highly recommend this. I don't know. And then I'm thinking, well, can tea make me live longer? And then I'm thinking, no, people die anyway. So that's not it. But it's just worked for me, and I'm sipping the peppermint tea right now. And he talked about a tea flavor yesterday. Am I boring you? He talked about a tea flavor yesterday, which is like a butter peppermint flavor. And I thought, oh my God, that's an amazing combination, butter and peppermint. That's, I want to just spread that all over my body. That's a really bad image that I just made. I apologize for that, for those of you that haven't eaten yet. That wasn't a pretty image to put forth. But I want to get that tea. He's got me hooked. Stephen Twinings, you bastard, you've got me hooked on tea. You know what that means? All my teeth are going to fall off. Because, I don't know if you know this, but the British, teeth-wise, not a big success with the teeth. Now, I don't know if they don't brush regularly, they don't floss. I have no idea what their habits are. I know they don't change their clothes every day. I know that for a fact. I've been to England a few times, and I've known people there that I stayed with when I went, and they don't change their clothes. I'm not sure if they change their underpants and undergarments, because I can't verify that. I didn't know them that well. But I know I was there like for a week at one point, and this guy and his girlfriend, they didn't change their clothes at all, man. They wore the same shirts and pants for 5 days straight, and it was remarkable. And the other people that I met there, they didn't change their clothes either. So they got something going there with a lackadaisical attitude, so to speak. And I know they had clothes. I saw closets. I figure they got clothes in them. And these were not poor people at all. So I don't know what the deal is without changing your clothes every day. But maybe they take the same attitude toward their teeth. Now, I don't know this for a fact. I really don't know. But I'm wondering, if I drink tea like this, are my teeth going to rot out? Because they all, not all, but everybody but one in that country has like yellow teeth. And it could be from smoking. I think they still smoke a lot. I really don't know that either. It's been a while since I've been to England. So I don't know the deal. If you're British, I apologize to you. This is my impression, which to me is significant. But thank you, Stephen Twinings, for getting me hooked on tea. You're probably going to find me on a curb somewhere begging for money. Please, please help me. I need money for tea, please. Just one more cup. Just one more cup, please. One more. I just want to take the... that butter peppermint smeared all over my body. Oh, here we go again. I apologize. I did that. Again, I didn't mean to do it. So, I didn't really lose my goldfish. That was just a theatrical ploy on my part to start the show. I had no basis. Although, I tell you, when I was a young child, and I don't remember what age I was. I don't even remember being a young child, to be honest with you. I'm sure I was, but I don't recall it. Nothing traumatic happened or anything like that, but I just don't recall it. It was insignificant. But I do remember a certain portion of my childhood. I've always loved animals. I've always loved, and I know you do too, for the most part, most of you. Unless you cook them and eat them, that's different. But I love animals, and I remember always asking my parents if I could have a dog. And they kept saying, no, no, shut the hell up, kid. You're not getting a dog. I don't know. Now, come to think about it, maybe it was abusive. But they said, you know what? We'll get you a turtle. And I thought, oh, cool, a turtle. Don't forget to get me a leash. So I think it was on my birthday or something. I was just a young kid. They get me a pair of turtles so that one turtle wouldn't be lonely. There were two turtles. The turtles' names were Lucky and Lucky Two. That's the Roman numeral two. Lucky One, Roman numeral one. Lucky two. And these were very small little turtles. And in order to make the turtles feel at home, we got them a green plastic bowl, because, of course, water is green. And we got them a plastic palm tree and a ramp. I don't know if you know much about turtles, but turtles feel very at home with plastic palm trees and ramps. They love that shit. They adore it. So the turtles are going up there, and they're not playing around too much, but they do recognize that there is a ramp. The palm tree, the plastic palm tree, I don't think they ever really knew what the hell was going on with that deal. They crap right in the water. I thought that there's a place that they go, like to the toilet or something, but they don't. Actually, they meet their demise in the toilet is what happens. But anyway, I had to change the water in the little plastic bowl on a daily basis, and I didn't know you had to do that. I thought plastic bowls were turtles' natural habitats. And then I would shake some turtle food in there. I don't know what the hell was in it. It was a little cardboard container, and inside was some kind of crap. And apparently it was turtle food. I don't know what turtle food consists of. I really don't know. Ground up chopped meat. I don't know what turtles eat. I had Lucky One and Lucky Two for 3 days, and then they both died simultaneously. I believe they committed suicide because they were just totally put out of place by the plastic palm tree. I think that scared the hell out of them. They died. And I believe my parents flushed them down the toilet, although I don't know for sure, because the next day they were gone, and so was the plastic bowl and the plastic palm tree and the ramp. About a year later, I started with my parents again. I really want a pet. I really want a dog. And they said, shut up, kid. You're not getting a dog. You're not old enough to be responsible to take care of a dog, and we're not taking care of the dog, so no dog. They called me kid, by the way, lovingly. Apparently, I got through to them, and for my birthday, I see this very small bowl sitting in my room with water in it and two goldfish. I named the two goldfish Lucky One and Lucky Two. These goldfish were very animated. They just swam around that tiny little bowl. There wasn't really far to swim. And I would look in the bowl. I'd stick my face up against the glass bowl, and the fish would look back at me. And that was the extent of our relationship. I couldn't pet them. I couldn't talk to them. I couldn't do anything with them. They just kind of like swam around the bowl in a very lackluster manner. Because there isn't too much to do in the bowl, there was no palm tree in there. And I would have to, again, with this little cardboard, little cylindrical container, I would feed it the fish food. I don't know what was in there, but they ate the fish food. I had to change the water every 2 days because it got very cloudy, which I think was full of fish shit. 4 days later, both goldfish were floating on the top of the water in the bowl. And I thought, either my fish have decided to do the breaststroke on the top of the water, or they're dead. They were dead. Both fish had basically, I think, committed suicide simultaneously because they were so freaking bored. There wasn't much for them to do. I believe greatly that they were flushed down the toilet to their demise. And the next day, the bowl was gone. A year later, I remember saying to my parents, look, we tried the turtles. We tried the fish. Didn't work. I really want a dog. To which my father specifically said, your mother won't even respond to you anymore. There will be no dog. You're not old enough to take care of dogs, and we're not taking care of a dog. So no. A few days later, I come home from school, and somehow that plastic bowl has returned with the palm tree. And in that bowl is a salamander, a newt, no bigger than the size of my thumb, a tiny little thing. It looked like a little alligator, but it wasn't. It was a lizard of some sort. It was kind of orangey. I think it was a newt. I don't know what newts are or what salamander. I don't. It was very, very small, and it was kind of cute, and it kind of walked around and stuff. We had to put a screen on the top of the bowl because otherwise this little lizard would climb out and crawl into my mouth and down my esophagus and kill me. That was the theory, at least that was the plan. I named this little newt salamander Lucky. 1 week later, Lucky was dead. I started to question my ability to raise animals to any maturity that went beyond 4 days. A year later, I'm sitting in my room, and I said to myself, I'm a loser. I love animals, but nothing's working out. My door opens, it's my father with a gigantic grin on his face. And my immediate thought was, you had sex with mom finally? But no, I looked down near his feet and there was a little tiny Springer Spaniel, a puppy dog, on a leash. And my father said, Rani, he is your dog. And a tear came to my eye. Well, I also had allergies. But a tear came to my eye, like, oh my God, finally, a dog. And my father said, honey, I want you to take care of this dog. That's the deal. We're not taking care of the dog. You have to walk the dog every day. You have to feed the dog. You wanted a dog. Here's your dog. And he turned around and he walked out of the room. And I know he had a gigantic grin on his face. It made him feel good. And I was just so happy. I named the dog Lucky. Little did I know, I shouldn't be naming animals Lucky because it don't work out accordingly. I loved that dog. We played. Well, I played. The dog watched me play. I jumped. I chased balls. I returned them to Lucky. I know that's not the way it's supposed to work, but we were having fun. But Lucky was not house trained, and my parents didn't know how to house train a dog, and I wasn't in the mood to walk Lucky every 2 hours so it could take a pee-pee somewhere. The pee-pees started occurring in the house. The poo-poos also started occurring in the house. My father became a little less tolerant of Lucky. And after 2 weeks, my father knocked on my bedroom door and I said, come in, father. We spoke like that. Come in, father. And he walked in and he said, honey, this is not working out. The dog must go back to the kennel. I'm so sorry, but it's ruining our house. And I said, I understand, Dad. I will miss Lucky. But again, this has not worked out. And I kind of agreed with my father. The whole house started smelling like crap. I cried. I missed Lucky. And as my father removed Lucky from my bedroom on the leash to take Lucky back to the kennel where he got it 2 weeks ago, he turned around and he looked at me and he said, Ronnie, let me tell you something. If you ever have another animal in your long, successful life, don't name it Lucky.
Ron Van Dam likes to treat every listener as someone with whom he is having an intimate, personal relationship. Although no money changes hands, there are fewer sticky bodily fluids, about half as many apologies, and he probably won't have to get rid of your body in the long run. Other than that, it's a pretty standard relationship for Ron. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show.
Wrapped up like a douche, another odor in the night. How did they get away with that? How did they get away with singing that song? I swear that's what it says. And you can't tell me otherwise. Well, you could, but it ain't going to happen.
Madman drove his bummer's engines in the summer with a teenage diplomat.
My poor dog.
Aww.
Yeah. By the way, when I finally grew up and left the house and started on my own, I had four cats in an apartment in New York City. Moved to Massachusetts. I've had upwards of three dogs at any given time. Right now I'm down to one. Two, three dogs at any given time usually. And none of them are named Lucky whatsoever. I would not dare do that. And if you have an animal named Lucky, I suggest you really, really reconsider at this point. I had Chinese food last night for dinner. You know, if you eat Chinese food with chopsticks, which you're supposed to do, you kind of lose weight because it takes so long to get that damn food in your mouth by finagling it with two little hockey sticks, two pool cues. It's literally impossible to eat quickly. But the Chinese figured that out. What they do is they take the food, they put it in a bowl, and they use those two sticks not to pick up the food, but to shove it in their mouth. They take the bowl, they put the bowl in their mouth, and then they shove the food in with the two sticks. It's lovely. I'm not being racist or anything, but I refuse to have an elegant dinner in a restaurant with anybody that puts the bowl to their mouth and shoves the food in with two sticks. I'm not going to do it. I videotaped a wedding in Chinatown about 15 years ago. And I remember it distinctly because at the reception, which was in this huge Chinese restaurant, in a reception room, and most of the attendees were indeed Chinese. And I'm videotaping the whole thing, you know. Here's what they do. They don't bring out the food on a plate for the guests at a Chinese banquet. They actually, there's a big lazy Susan in the middle of the tables, and it's like a big like merry-go-round of food. And what they do is they take their chopsticks that they've already put in their mouth with their saliva on it, and they as a community. They stick their chopsticks in the main serving bowls with the rice and all that stuff, and they shove it onto their plate. In other words, there's no serving spoon. There's your chopsticks that you put in your mouth, and you put that in the big bowl that everybody shares, and you shove it onto your plate. It's the most... If one person had any type of a disease whatsoever, they're all getting it. It was the most... I just couldn't believe it. I Why don't you just all French kiss each other? Because that's basically what you're doing. You're swapping saliva through your sticks. And believe me, putting your saliva on wooden sticks, I think that saliva and your germs are pretty much being embaked in that wood there. I don't think they just, it's not Teflon. It's just a disgusting idea, but they didn't seem to care. I don't know. It's just a large community of people. Not me, ladies and gentlemen. There's some weird customs with every culture. Very weird customs. I don't know. I assumed someone from another country would come to the United States and say, "You people are weird. You shower every day. That's weird." And I would say, "What are you talking about? We shower every day. What's the big deal? We're very clean." "Very clean? You people are too clean. What's the matter with you? You're like obsessive." I guess there's other stuff that we do that other people would say is just weird. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure it's the case. My guest today is a very interesting person. You hear about all these people that have these lectures and they're motivational speakers, and you really get motivated by these people. They have a way of doing that. This guy I've talked to before, Michael Alden, he's written a book, A Blueprint to Business, but it's not just about business. It's about actually like stimulating your life, making things a little more successful than they have been through attitude. And I need this little shot of adrenaline every once in a while from a person like this. So let's talk to our guest. Michael Alden joins us now. He's an entrepreneur. He's written a Blueprint to Business, which is the ultimate goal to becoming a successful entrepreneur, as we would all like to do. Is there a certain formula to this? I mean, everybody wants to for their dreams to come true in this sense.
Yeah, you know, there is a formula to success, right? And there are certain things I think that people need to learn, and there are certain things that people need to do. But, you know, one of the kind of the key overarching themes in Blueprint of Business, you know, and, you know, I've written a couple other books, is that there are a lot of books out there, there are a lot of programs out there, a lot of systems out there that try to teach people how to be successful as an entrepreneur, but they really don't give you the real information about what it's really like to be an entrepreneur, what it's like when you're, you know, when you run out of money, what it's like when you can't cover payroll, what it's like when, you know, when there's just constant obstacles in your way, and how to overcome those obstacles, and then really kind of what to do. And then the other part is the basics, right? The non-sexy stuff in business, things like your intellectual property, right? Yeah. I tell story after story where people, you know, build businesses and they forget to do the basics of just, you know, filing for a trademark or even actually forming a business. And I mean, there are so many small business, quote, small businesses all over the country where people, you know, where they're operating as a sole proprietorship, and they're really opening themselves up for all sorts of liabilities. So that's Blueprint to Business is really a kind of a, you know, a raw, unfiltered guide to the true essence of what it's like to be a successful entrepreneur.
I guess people always have this model in their mind about being an entrepreneur. Everybody's got that, I think, if, you know, unless you sleep all day. But I guess what you're saying is you're going to encounter problems. That's a fact. And that's where many people pretty much turn around and say, nah, it's not worth it. It's too much.
Right, and exactly, and that's life in general, right? You know, a lot of people, you know, in my book prior to this is called 5% More, and I talk about, you know, it's the last 5% in anything in life, even in entrepreneurship. You hear so many times where people, they're so close, they're like literally at the edge of success, and they give up because they're just constantly being hit with obstacles. And here's the thing that I learned a long time ago is that the struggle is what creates life. And so when you understand that, you know, man, it is going to be difficult, it is going to be hard, and you know, work through that mindset and understand that, like, look, there are going to be days when you wake up in the morning and you don't want to get out of bed because you've just been beat up so heavily. You know, that is just life. But understanding that that's going to happen, understanding, you know, that most things don't work. You know, look, I just recently had a friend of mine reach out to me, and he wanted me to get involved in this business that I know nothing about. Uh-huh. And one of the first things he says to me, he sends it to me in a text. He says, Mike, since everything you touch turns to gold. Yeah. And I kind of chuckled because it's the complete opposite. Almost everything I do doesn't work. And that's just the way it is as an entrepreneur. That's just the way it is in life. It's the things that do work that make a huge difference.
See, what you just said is like mind-boggling because almost everything you do doesn't work, yet you're successful. That's something I didn't expect to hear.
Well, that's the stuff that you don't see, right? That's the stuff that you don't hear. You don't hear about business after business or idea that just doesn't work. Look, I just recently got involved in a business. We spent over a year and a half development. It was a huge regulatory constraints that we had to do and a lot of hoops we had to jump through and had to get all these certain approvals because we felt as though this is an emerging business. We felt as though that it could help people. And we spent all this time, and then we finally get ready and we're launching it. And ultimately, it didn't work. And you know what? That's, you know, from a business owner perspective, I can handle it, right? I'm not happy about it. Yeah. But the other weird part about it is that I have a bunch of people that work for me, right? Yeah. And so for them, it's tough for them to even say, well, hold on, like, we've been doing this, and now you're telling me we're not doing it anymore. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, that's the way it is. But it's, again, it's those things that do work. You know, I'm in the advertising business, direct response business. Uh-huh. 90% of our ads don't work.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm the guy that's in most of them. And you know what? That, like, emotionally, psychologically, that hurts, especially when I'm the guy. Like, I'm the guy that's on TV or I'm the guy that's on the radio, and it doesn't work. But you know what? That's just life. That's how business is. And you know, when you look at every successful entrepreneur, they're always getting beat up. They're always, you know, having things that don't work for them. Yeah. The key is getting to the one that really kind of defines you.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, you hear about, you know, in show business, especially with celebrities or comedians or actors, you hear this term overnight success. And then you talk to them and you say, oh, my God, what's it like to just wake up in the morning and all of a sudden you're successful? And they always say, well, this is the first time maybe you've heard of me, but I've been around like for decades trying to do this. This is right. This is not an overnight success. This is after a long, hard struggle. And yeah, it's simply because we hadn't heard of him before.
Yeah, and you know, it's so true, you know. I mean, you can hear story. I mean, David Spade recently said, my last overnight success took me 10 years.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
You know, Kelly Clarkson was just on Howard Stern, and she was talking, everyone thinks that she just came onto the spotlight
right.
and bypassed, mm-hmm. you know, the kind of the 10,000-hour rule through Outliers, which is
yeah.
she just went on American Idol, became, you know, one, and then
right.
became, like, uber famous.
Yep.
That's not true. I mean, she was working up until then. She moved out to L.A. She
yep.
did all these different things. It, by the way, it didn't work for an L.A. She went back to Texas, you know, but was, you know, continued to uh-huh. to pursue her vision, continue to pursue her goals, and ultimately it happened for her. But you're right. There's no such thing as an overnight success.
Right.
Now, can you see, like, you guys look at, I always use him for an example, as really, like Justin Bieber. Okay, people think, well, he just was an overnight success.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's not true. I mean, yeah, he did some stuff on YouTube, but he was at 13, 14 years old, he was out there trying to develop a brand, and then ultimately he got discovered.
Yeah.
It doesn't just happen overnight. Success doesn't just happen overnight. That's just not reality. In Blueprint to Business, I talk about reality.
Yeah. The other thing you mentioned, which is very interesting, is when you start your own business or develop your own idea, it's you. It's not sitting in an office working for somebody else and collecting a paycheck and, you know, well, I'm sure they're making more money than I am. When you're an entrepreneur, it's and something doesn't work out or you get a comment that is negative, that's they're talking about you by name pretty much. I mean, It's your baby. It's someone's insulted your baby.
Yeah, you know, and you're right. I mean, look, you know, anybody who tells you that doesn't, you know, that they can handle that, they're probably lying.
Yeah.
You know, or that they don't feel that. I mean, handling it is one thing, or they might know they know what doesn't bother me. Well, that's not true. But here's the thing that I do tell people to help overcome that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look, if I looked at the reviews for my previous two books, which I have, okay, I'm just human, it happens.
Right.
And what you do, like, there are some reviews that say it's the worst book they've ever written, and that mm-hmm. doesn't feel good, right?
Right.
But one of the things that I learned early on in my career was, and this is, you know, somewhat controversial, but not really when you understand it. I tell people to stop caring. And people say, whoa, what do you mean stop caring?
Mm.
Stop caring about what other people think.
Yeah.
Stop caring about what you're, you know, how other people perceive you. And worry about actually becoming the person, whether it be professionally or personally, becoming the person that you want to be. Then everything else will come into place. You won't have to worry about your reputation,
yeah.
because your reputation will just happen based off of the activity, based off of the actions, based off of the things that you're doing. So stop caring about how other people perceive you and start living the life that you really want.
Yeah. You talk about legalities, which is also a concern that a lot of entrepreneurs have, where if I do well, I become a target.
Yeah, you know, and that, you know, people say, look, you know, I haven't been in business until you've been sued, and,
yeah.
and you know, I'm an attorney by trade,
yeah.
and, you know, knock on wood, you know, fortunately, I haven't been sued, haven't been involved in lawsuits.
Right.
However, as an attorney, I've defended lawsuits, and I've worked for companies that have been sued all over the place. That's
yeah.
just not fun. It's really negative activity.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but here's the thing, though. This is one of the things I tell people to do. If you're going down that road, and
yeah.
there's no way to avoid it, okay?
Yeah.
I tell people, and this is something, again, that I think you're not going to hear this in really any other book.
Yeah.
Become comfortable with the worst-case scenario. Once you become comfortable with the worst-case scenario, then your bargaining position, and
yeah.
then everything else from there is just positive. And so when
yeah.
if you become comfortable with the fact that you're going to get sued for $1 million,
uh-huh.
okay, and you think, well, what's the worst that could happen? Well, I could lose my business. If that's the worst thing that could happen, get comfortable with it,
uh-huh.
and then move on from there. It is a great way to negotiate, especially when you don't have any leverage, because I've been in multiple instances where I have no leverage. And knowing that, in fact, I'm probably, you know, going to get sued or probably not, you know, probably not going to win this fight, so to speak. And I let the other side know that, hey, look, I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable with you suing me. I'm comfortable with you doing whatever it is you need to do, but let's still try and work it out. Nine times out of 10, 9.999 times out of 10, it will work out because nobody wins in a lawsuit except lawyers.
Yeah. I think there's a phrase, beware of the person who has nothing to lose, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, when you have nothing to lose, you put yourself in an unbelievable bargaining position. And when I say you get comfortable with it, I really mean think about, you know, what could possibly happen. Think about the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. And usually the worst case scenario isn't that bad. Mm-hmm. And then again, you could just move on from there. When people recognize, like what you said, that, wow, this guy's literally got nothing to lose, mm-hmm. then everything else is really going to put you in a great position.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. I'm giving you my opinion, having read Blueprint to Business. It's not just for people in business. It is, but it's not. I mean, it's also it's also a blueprint for your life, for your successes in life, your attitudes, the way you approach things. It really goes beyond that. It's called Blueprint to Business, and there are many other books that are also available. Where do we go for the book? Obviously, we can get it on Amazon, all that kind of thing. But is there a website where we can take a look at all the selections?
Sure. Actually, you can just go to Michael-Alden, A-L-D-E-N.com. I'm also on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook. It's at MikeAlden2012. Again, at M-I-K-E-A-L-D-E-N 2012. Like you said, it's available on Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble. I'm really glad that you said that, too, because the title itself, Blueprint to Business, doesn't necessarily mean you have to be in business. Right. But what I do tell people is your life is, in fact, a business.
That's true. That's true. Hey, Michael, always a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Bye-bye. I am so motivated. I'm going to go out and build a house right now, immediately. Thank you so much for joining me today. You've been very, very patient. I appreciate that. Join me again tomorrow. Will you do that, please? That'd be fun. Let's do that. Let's make an appointment. Right, write it down. I'll wait. Tomorrow, same time. Or whatever, whatever's convenient for you. Show's always here. Doesn't matter. You can even listen to it over the weekend. I don't care. Okay? Good. We're all set? Everything fine? All right? Good. Okay, fine. Wish you peace.